Charles, that's what it did for him.
You have a collection of furniture ads?
This is one manual called 131 Stress Reducing, Recession Busting, Profit Proven Furniture Ads. It's all oriented towards furniture stores. A mini course in what makes a good furniture ad and the criteria. Then it reproduces 131 outstanding furniture ads, some of them from way back right up to the time this manual was published in 1982.
And a lot of these you worked on and your father worked on?
A good many of the ads were produced by Basic. My father may have worked on some of these. It would have been mainly myself and Jim Alexander and the copywriter we had at the time. They're all analyzed in depth. I didn't give you the whole analysis of that leather ad, but they're all analyzed in depth. The copy is big enough to be easily read, and a great many of them have specific sales figures.
Can a furniture store survive without running advertising in the newspaper? It is standard. I don't know much about the furniture retail trade, but that is their standard way of selling,
well,
is it?
Well, in some markets, the dominant furniture store might be primarily a television advertiser.
That's true.
You know, it's hard to lay down an absolute rule. For most advertisers, the newspaper is still the logical medium because it reaches most of the solvent families in the area. And to get on television with a lot of frequency, you've got to have a pretty decent budget. And if you are going to do other than semi-institutional, that means doing a lot of different commercials, which can add up to money. But television is a wonderful media for the stores that can afford it, or for an organization that has stores in areas that could not be easily covered by one newspaper. It's a wonderful medium for a store that has attractive showrooms where they can actually show the showrooms far better than they could in any newspaper ad or circular. In working with furniture, we point out the strengths and the weaknesses of all media. All media have great strengths. All of them have weaknesses or limitations. Usually, a media mix is the optimum way to go.
Okay. I've got the table of contents on all the different parts in the Advertising Mastery course. But can we breach on some of the topics here and talk a little bit about them? How to convert white space into advertising itself. In that, part one is titled The Advertising's Job. And you have a description here. The best advertising is always a marriage of interesting writing or imaginative approach and of sound selling technique. Mastery of the creation of this dual-natured advertising that sells is not arrived by chance, but by study, a rational academic approach. Is that how your dad took on advertising?
Yes, by academic approach, he did not mean theoretical. He meant a studious approach. You don't advertise by the seat of your pants. If you want to be a professional, effective advertiser, creator of effective ads, you do it with the full body of knowledge at your command, that you have mastered the underlying framework of the necessary ingredients to a successful ad. You wouldn't want to go to a surgeon who said, why don't we cut in here today? See what we get. Gee, we've never done this before. This is creative. You wouldn't feel real happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
Retail advertising is so often just thrown into the paper at the last minute with no thought. National advertising is, I hate to say it, but primarily created by extremely talented and brilliant creative people that don't understand or maybe don't even have an interest in selling. What they're looking for is something creative. Here's another thing. This is not a rare example. In 2002, Sears Roebuck paid $1.9 billion for Land's End. You're familiar with Land's End?
Right.
Great catalog success. And Sears, they're selling to the kind of customers we like to sell. They've got good merchandise, just a little higher grade than ours. So they put in little Land's End boutiques in their retail stores. But then they're advertising. They would advertise in the color supplement in the Sunday papers the same way they advertised before, with a picture and no copy at all. Whereas you read a Land's End ad on a pair of slacks or a pair of shorts or men's shirts or something, powerful selling copy. Well, now Sears is disappointed with their Land's End sale. Now they're trying to sell Land's End for $1.2 billion. They learned nothing. Nothing. They didn't even realize why Land's End was successful, except that merchandise must have looked pretty good. And then they don't learn a thing about how Land's End is selling it. They screw it up, and you take Federated Department Stores, buying Robinson's May. They want to save money on advertising. And yet, neither one of those stores has any benefits in any of their ads at all. Macy's, they're selling maybe jackets or suits for men. They don't talk to you, Michael, or to me. They say, for him. For him.
Well, here's part two, and that brings up a good point. The six foundation truths. There is only one language of advertising. It is the universal language of the prospect. What do I get out of it?
Exactly. The only thing the prospect cares about is what's in it for me. I don't really care about you. I don't care if you've got a new arrival of a whole bunch of spring stuff. How does that affect me? Is it going to look good on me? Is it going to make me feel good? If I'm a young gal, is this going to really flatter my best points and make the guys really lust after me? What's in it for me? There may be exceptions that I don't know, but I don't know any retailer that is using literally any benefits in any of their ads whatsoever. Certainly none that I see in the Los Angeles Times.
Part three, the raw materials of all good advertising. Can you talk just a little bit on that part, what someone's going to learn?
Those raw materials are benefits and selling points, or others might call them features. Essentially, we teach that regardless of whatever business it is or whatever you're trying to sell, people buy only in the hope or the expectation of gaining or realizing a benefit or of avoiding a loss, which in itself is a benefit. Now, if advertising is professional salesmanship multiplied by the circulation of the media, and if people buy only to gain benefits, and yet there are no benefits in your ad, is that good selling?
No.
Impossible. And yet most advertising today, national, local, other than in direct response, it's like you're going to go to jail if you put a benefit in your ad. They do not exist in ads. Secondly, the product points or features, they do a wee bit better job in putting those things in, maybe three or four bullet points with features. But many ads omit most of those. Now, just piling on a lot of benefits, if you don't support them, back them up with the features that make them possible, pretty soon sounds to be, as David Ogilvy would put it, flatulent puffery. But if you marry benefits with supporting product points and speak the language of the prospect, appeal to his or her self-interest, and start with the most compelling and work your way right through and come up with a strong action close, then you've got a pretty darn good chance of selling quite a bit of merchandise, if that's your objective, or of bringing people in to buy, if you've got that kind of a location, or of getting them to fill in the lead-generating coupon, if that's your ambition.
Give me two examples of features and benefits for, let's say, for this course, how to convert white space into advertising that sells. That would be a good example illustrating what you just said.
Sure. If you get this course and study it, you will know more about what makes advertising sell and how you can make your advertising sell and bring you more money for less cost consistently than anybody else in your field or in your community. And that's because the course was written by a master student of advertising that accessed millions upon millions of dollars worth of results-tested advertising, compiled the common denominators into a system that takes you step-by-step from how to think about advertising before you even start the ad, right down to the final pitch to get the money. You have it all right there, and it's authoritative. It's not available anyplace else, although there are many other advertising books and so on that are useful, but nowhere else is an entire proven, tested system laid out for you step by step that will enable you to turn your what would normally be an advertising expense into a money-generating power.
Okay, I got a little riddle. What's the easiest way to cut your advertising expense in half?
Double your response.
That's right.
The same dollars get twice the response. It's just like cutting your advertising expense in half.
Can you double your response without extra money?
You can often double, quadruple, or make it 10 times. Or in the case of some people that got no response, like the leather sofa guy I was telling you about, from nothing to whatever number, I mean, how do you multiply zero? The increase you can have is infinite.
It brings me to part four of the course.
Yeah.
And that's the great headline ingredients. Can we talk about that?
Sure. first of all, the importance of the headline. We know that if the headline does not immediately capture the attention and interest of the targeted reader, the person that we're trying to sell, they're not going to read the body copy. The headline is the entrance or the gateway to the ad. So you have to have a compelling ad that reaches right off the page and grabs your prospect by the collar and says, hey, this is important to you, it's of interest to you, pay attention and read on. That's the purpose of the headline. If anybody was to determine to say, look, I've got headlines are so important, I'm going to spend $5 million to find out what makes a good headline, they would come up with what in this course are called the 5 proven great headline ingredients. There are really, as far as I know, nobody has ever come up with any others. So if your headline includes one or preferably more of these 5, one or more of these 5 ingredients, you're on the way to having a good headline. Well, we've already talked about self-interest. The people love themselves and they buy because of self-interest. So headline ingredient number 1 is mention the prospect, that is the person you're writing to, and or an interest of the prospect. An example of the prospect is when you would say you or an implied you look like $1 million in the newest spring fashion colors. The you is implied when you say look like. A headline with an interest of the prospect is often used when selling medical treatments or things like that. For instance, one that has run for many years over and over is a big bold type, backache? Question mark. If you've got a backache, you're going to see that ad. If you don't have a backache, that has no interest for you whatsoever. So you have to know your prospect and try to write a headline that either speaks to the prospect or an interest of the prospect. Second ingredient, since people buy for no other reason than hoping or expecting to gain a benefit, if you advertise a benefit in your headline, a benefit of interest to who you're trying to reach, that of course is speaking to their interest. Third one is the use of news to the point. Why do people watch the evening news? Why do they buy Time Magazine and Newsweek? Why do they buy newspapers? Because they're interested in the news. So we know that people are interested in the news, so if we can use that in our advertising, we're making our advertising message newsworthy. There are a variety of ways to do that. One can be by using words like new, or here now, or at last, or finally, or just arrived, or something of that nature that would tie in with the universal interest in news or what's new. Another thing that's useful is tie in with the news or with something that's in the news. Just as an example, of all people, the 99-cent store and their Los Angeles Times ad recently, right after the Oscars, the headline was, it's not $1 million, it's 99 cents, baby. You know, that million-dollar baby that just won the Academy Award.
Yeah, yeah.
A pretty smart tie-in with a news event. So whenever you can use news, it's a good idea to do it. Fourth headline ingredient, the one that inexperienced or people unfamiliar with what makes advertising sell are apt to use is curiosity. Curiosity is not good unless it is used directly in a pertinent way. An example would ask a question. Are you ashamed of the weeds in your lawn? Are you making too little money for the long hours you put in? The fact that it's a question is curiosity, but it's directly tied to the prospect. And then, of course, you need to answer that as you get going in the copy. Another way you use curiosity is to say 5 quick steps to increased advertising results. Well, 5 steps? What are those 5 steps? And the person would want to read to find out what they were. And the fifth headline ingredient is to mention the product favorably, to use favorable adjectives. Just right off, we've talked about that Buick LaCrosse ad. If they had said, instead of just Buick LaCrosse, if they'd say the all-new 6-cylinder turbocharged Buick LaCrosse, if that was the case,
right,
would be better than just the label Buick LaCrosse. It would mention the product favorably. They don't even think enough of their product to do that. You know, mentioning self-interest. Nordstrom's is one of the great department stores. They started in the shoe business. Here's a full-color ad, and the other day shows 90 pairs of shoes. The headline is, "We love shoes." Well, goody for you. Who cares? So what? That's speaking the language of the advertiser, not the language of the prospect. if they would say, you'll find the shoes you love that flatter your feet and so on at Nordstrom, then they would be talking the language of the prospect. So I'll give you a challenge, Michael. You go through the San Diego Union for a week or a day or whatever. See how many ads you come up with that meet any of the headline ingredients. See how many you come up with that have any benefits at all.
Let's go on a little bit in the course. There's part 4, part 5, and part 6, part 7, all related to body copy. But talk a little bit about body copy and how important it is in these different parts.
Well, body copy is where the real selling gets done. It's the words, the right words, and enough of them, that do the selling. If somebody walks into a car showroom and the merchandise is there and you have a very nicely attired gentleman or a very spiffy, beautiful woman standing there next to it just looking but not saying anything, there's not any selling taking place, is there? It takes words to sell. Anybody that has sold anything in person knows that you can't sell without words. The same thing, because advertising is simply a form of selling, is true in advertising, and maybe even more so, because the prospect is not in the presence of the merchandise or the service. So the words have to do the selling, have to present the information about the product or service in a way that the prospect will be motivated to buy, or at least get up out of his chair and decide to go to the store or go find a pair of scissors and tear out the coupon. We should also be saying that so much of this transfers directly to the internet, where your website, if it isn't using words powerfully to sell, you might as well not have that website. It isn't going to make you any money. I suspect that's one reason why so many of the internet entrepreneurs have bought this course, because they are keen aware. They're interested in selling, and they don't have a store that people are going to stumble into out of habit or because they've got a great location. Their words are going to have to drive people to click on that order now button and give them the credit card number. So learning how to sell with words is absolutely essential, and this course is probably the place that teaches it in more depth than any place else available. It actually, when you know the formula, you just go from step A, B, C, D. We talked about the headline being the gateway to the ad that determines who's going to enter. So once you've got them into the ad, you want to immediately, to mix my metaphors here, you want to set the hook. A lot of advertisers will change the subject when they start their copy, whereas the thing that you want to do is immediately expand on that which got them into the ad in the first place. So you expand on the idea of the headline that sold them on starting to read the copy. And then you want to whet and sharpen the desire of the prospect for whatever the service or the product that you're offering. And so what you want to do is add conviction, carry conviction, make your benefits believable.
Let's do another example related to how to convert white space into advertising, because it will illustrate this point. Can you come up with anything that would fit that part, the body copy, carry conviction, being believed?
Well, one of the best ways to carry conviction in terms of the course is the sheer weight of the caliber of the testimonials and what the testimonials say. I mean, we probably have more, literally, file drawers about this method and about this course and the results achieved by advertisers that are very happy in all fields. Testimonials are one of the most powerful and believable ways of adding conviction. Another way of adding conviction is a money-back guarantee, being the advertiser takes the risk that the customer is really not taking a risk at all. Try it out. If you're not happy, hey, no harm. You'll get your money back. That's another important way. I think the first money-back guarantee was probably Sears Roebuck, satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. So ads generally should use that technique if at all possible. At Costco, in their big sign in their store, if at any time you're not satisfied, bring it back for a refund. It takes a lot of the worry out of making a purchase. The farther away a customer is from the source of that purchase, for instance, somebody buying by mail order or buying over the internet, carrying conviction is of utmost importance. Certainly an awful lot of claims are being made in internet copy, but if there's not an awfully strong believability factor, why, people can slip away.
All right, how about the last part, asking for action in business?
Well, the whole purpose of the ad is to get people to respond, to fill in a coupon, pick up the telephone, come to the store, click the Buy Now button. So often, sales ads, majority of the ads, even general ads, don't ask for any action. They just tell whatever story they're going to tell and turn around and walk away, which is, without asking people to do something, more likely they won't. So if you've got them and they've read your ad or read your copy and they really desire it, and you have convinced them that what you say is true, that they don't have to worry about it, you're going to deliver what they're buying or ordering, then what you've got to do is to tie it all together and get them to make that commitment. And to do that, it's important to realize that if they don't do it right then, they're probably never going to do it. They're not going to remember your next ad or whatever. You've got to close the sale now. You do that by telling them specifically what to do and how to do it. If it's a direct response ad, you say, pick up your pen, check the coupon, and mail it in. Also effectively in direct response is when there is a finite quantity. We only have 37 of these, or we have a limited number and the first edition will be gone, and when they're gone, that's it. There won't be any more. Other ways that sometimes are effective in getting action would be in a direct response kind of a situation. For the first 100 only, throw in an extra added bonus. Stores frequently have sales that are for 3 days only. The retailers, in their brilliant wisdom, they have one-day sales. You see them all the time. One-day sales Saturday, special hours, starts Friday, 9 a.m. to 5. And then, so it's really a two-day sale, and they advertise a one-day sale.
Yeah, that's funny.
But at least there's a limitation on it. Of course, in retail, nobody believes anybody anymore anyway. I asked a lady once, years ago, in Robinson's, when is this sale going to end? The lady looked at me like I was crazy. She says, how long are you planning to live?
That's funny. That's funny.
So those kind of actions oftentimes don't carry much credibility.
Hi, it's Michael Senoff again with HardToFindSeminars.com. This is the end of part 3. Please continue to part 4.